You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World. And with me is Vice President David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. Let's start off on something that's not particularly relevant at the moment before we ease into the chaos that has been ensuing. It started on Thursday, but David, it looks as though Shapiro might well be the Vice President of the United States, or the nominee for that position. What do you think?
I don't know. He seems to be a favorite at the moment, you know, and he's a very competent, good man. Mm-hmm. Strangely enough, he's a observant Jew. Yeah. You know, in other words, observant is something that means it's not what I am. He goes to shul and does all the rituals, etc. You know, he's quite observant, probably keeps the Shabbos, you know, won't. Joe Lieberman was like this as well. Remember, he was Gore's big mate back there. He died recently, I think. So, but I think he's a very competent person.
Mm.
And I think it would make a good match. I'm very intrigued by what's unfolding. And I think it's Ed Lucci, L-U-C-E.
I don't know. Not familiar with him.
He wrote he's in the Financial Times.
Okay.
He wrote an article, yeah. And what I loved about him is, you know, he spoke about Trump. And I think the one area that I picked up about Trump was that people are getting tired of him. He hasn't changed his act. And he said it was like Bob Hope, you know, telling his 1960s stories today. You know, they just don't work. You know, what was relevant there. And I keep thinking of it, and that's exactly who Trump is. You know, I love Bob Hope, so I don't even want to insult Bob Hope. But, I mean, it's like an old-timer, you know, who's – it's like my dad used to tell his old jokes all the time. He said, okay, you know, we've heard enough of them. You know, my mom had royal blood. She was stung by a queen bee. You know, those kind of jokes.
Oh, and shit.
So Trump reminds me, he never does anything new. He's just the same old recycled, old man saying the same old ugly things.
Yeah, and there's a new book out, which I don't know if it's that new, but Fred Trump III, who is Donald Trump's nephew, has come out and has been scathing about his uncle. And also his niece was the same, and she's been very vocal in that. But anyway, we're getting off subject here, David. But I have to tell a joke before you go, because there was a chap in England talking about old people. He died when he was 62, which was a while ago, called Les Dawson.
And I remember him.
I saw some documentaries about him on one of my insomniac nights the other day. The sort of joke he would tell would be this. He said, I had a stomach upset last week, so I went to see the doctor, and I said, Doctor, what can you give me for wind? And he gave me a kite. Which... They're timeless, these jokes. David, last week the Bank of Japan raised interest rates in order to protect the yen, which had gone above 160 yen to the US dollar. It's currently around about 143 to the US dollar, so it has been effective. And we spoke to Viv about this briefly. That started something. And the Japanese stock market fell on the Thursday. Then on the Friday, it had a big fall. It was, I think, 6% lower. That's the Nikkei Dow. And then, of course, today, everything has gone. The Tokyo market down, over 12%. And although the US markets are sort of stabilizing a bit, recovering somewhat, it has been complete chaos. And to combine with that, bad economic data from Europe in the form of Germany, the powerhouse of Europe, and also, waning powerhouse, in my opinion, but also the US jobs numbers, only 114,000 jobs created, but jobs nonetheless. So I don't know, is it all a bit overblown, do you think, a bit overdone?
I think so. You know, I'm trying to get my thoughts clear, but the data came out on Friday morning early. Mm.
Yeah.
Therefore, the market had plenty of time to digest it. And there were calls. There was a lot of calls for Powell, to lower rates. Yes, he's missed an opportunity. But then on the weekend, as I started to read, I thought, okay, I'm angry. I'm angry with Powell because he didn't lower rates and this is all going to fall in a heap. But going through reports and everything, no one seemed concerned. No one was concerned that the U.S. economy is actually going into a recession. You know, when they looked at the jobs numbers, they said, look, they still increased jobs. There were reason because, you know, why jobs were down. They made, you know, there was valid reason. More people have come onto the job market. Therefore, the unemployment rate is not really, you know, you can't really use it. So there were a lot of things that, that you know, that were said about that. I think the other thing is that what the chances of a recession, yes, they've increased, but it's only 1 in 4. Goldman Sachs have said that. Capital Economics, you know, going through, understanding the economy much greater than I have. So this whole fear of recession is overblown. What has caused it is, as you mentioned, was Japan.
Yeah.
You know, by raising rates by from 0.1 to 0.25, of course, it's unsettled those speculators, traders who borrowed yen and then used the very cheap yen to go into other markets. And all of a sudden, when rates go up like this, it begins to squeeze. Also, the yen has improved. Lindsay, what was it? 160, I think.
It was over 160, and it's now 143, roughly speaking.
You know, you're squeezed. When the currency falls like that or improves like that, it does have an impact. And it also, a lot of people went into the Japanese market because of the weak yen was helping a lot of their trading companies, a lot of their exporters.
Yes.
Well, things are turning around. And at one point, I think the Japanese market was was at an all-time high. It had taken, 35 years to get there.
Yeah.
It's given that all back. You know, it's given back over 20%. So the disruptions in the so-called carry trade, you know, carry trade meaning you borrow yen, cheap yen, or and then you use that to go into European markets or U.S. markets, Australian markets, wherever you went.
Mm.
All of those trades are being unraveled. And when you force a trader to unravel, you know, the outcome is enormous. I don't know if you recall. You remember long-term capital?
Long-term capital management, yes. LTCM.
Yes, remember when they were long of bonds and I think that, or they were long of emerging bonds or short of U.S. one way or the other. I can't exactly remember the trade.
Yeah.
And they were caught. They were caught on the wrong side. There was a move, I think, in emerging markets. They fell or something like that. They were caught on the wrong side and had to unravel. It caused monumentous problems in the U.S. to a point, I think, where even Greenspan lowered rates in order to save markets. I can't remember. This was, you know, when genius failed. There's a wonderful book about that area. And this is kind of the same thing. You know, when these traders get caught, it's chaos because there's no way out. You've got to unravel.
There are going to be casualties, David, because you don't have a 6% fall one day, a 3% fall the previous day. It's almost like this is Japan's October 87 because that's exactly what happened to the Dow. It fell a bit on the Thursday. It fell more on the Friday. And then there was chaos, of course, Black Monday on October the 19th, 1987. You look at the graphs, and it looks very similar to what's happened in Japan over the last 3 days as well. And a 12.3% fall in a big market, in a big economy, there are going to be some casualties. And there will be people now from the Bank of Japan and the Japanese government sitting there and saying, okay, what do we do next? What's our next move? Because 12.3% in a day, I've never seen that before. I mean, I suppose 2011, the Fukushima a nuclear disaster was one thing, and the tsunami, and October 87 also bad. But this is, in recent history, this is catastrophic.
And you get what that negative feedback loop, you know, where it does start to affect people, where the wealth affects people. So even though there's no threat of a recession in the United States, and I'm talking in the same breath as Japan, you know, even though there might not be a threat to the underlying economy, what happens is people lose confidence.
Yes.
When they lose confidence, they pull back, you know, so you don't want to buy. All of a sudden, you're thinking of buying a new car or something. No, I'm going to wait. You know, all of a sudden, my portfolio has taken a bit of a knock. And businesses do the same, consumers do the same, and it starts to feed on itself and come down. So there are, you know, while the U.S. is in good shape and the global economy hasn't felt the effect from Japan to the U.S., the fall in the markets can have some impact on psychology. And that might be an issue. I'm not saying it is an issue, But they have to, you know, they have to watch very carefully whether or not it does have that impact on the underlying economy. So, yeah. You know, Lindsay, there's one thing. I just to explain that, I always say to, you know, people say, we don't watch our share price. You know, we CEOs of big companies, it takes care of itself. No, you must watch, because what it does is it tells you what's happening in the underlying business. People, this is their view of you. And that's why I'm saying in this, you know, Fed has to take consideration of what's happening, because this is the view from outside of their policies and of the economy.
There has been a substantial recovery in the US market. When I say substantial, that's me being an optimist, because the low of the day on the S&P 500 futures was 5,120. It's now 108 points higher than that. It's like only down 2.75%. But people are saying, wait a second, it's a regional problem. It's a Japan problem that started it.
Yeah.
And the US economy is still creating jobs. It's still got positive GDP. It's not that bad. Mohamed El Arian was on CNN about 45 minutes ago. Very, very clever. And I don't know if he's he's obviously clever, but he explained things in layman's terms so I could understand what he was talking about. He's assigned a 35% chance of recession in the US, and he's had that for a while. And he said, no, not changing it because of what's happened today. He said, but if you have a look at it this way, there's a 65% chance that there won't be a recession. So think about it that way. And he went through all the, you know, consumer spending arguments and everything, and the yield and the yen and the whole works. But he was fairly sanguine about the whole thing. I suppose he's paid to be by Allianz. I think he's the chief economic advisor now at Allianz, having been head of PIMCO for all those years, where he gained his reputation. But yeah, I'm not that worried. 102-point rally on the S&P. I think this is an opportunity. And as for people saying that it's an AI problem and that bubble has burst, nothing to do with AI, this sell-off, to me.
No, absolutely. It's not at all. And that's why I went through the numbers on the weekend. And I just started to look and say, have I missed something? And when you see the combined amount of money that's being spent on AI, first of all, these businesses have got the money to do it. You know what I'm saying? It's not like they're going and begging or knocking on the door of banks. They've got the cash to do it. So it's not like they're spending other people's money. You might say it's other shareholders, but I don't think so. And it's still very much a theme that's going to continue to drive growth, you know, into the future. This was the only game in town.
Yeah.
You know, if it wasn't for AI, the downturn that we saw in 2022 would have continued. You know, as the U.S. kept rates high, as consumers felt the pressure, you know, stimulus started to run out, and that inflation took hold, and so on. So this was the this was the only game in town, and now of course it tires after 18 months and that. So, but I'm not concerned. You know, in fact, most of the results that I went through as well, I went through Ferrari's numbers. Mm-hmm. I say this is completely staggering. You know, no sense of a pullback at all, while other luxury goods have. I mean, they're a really good company. You know, I love the brand. I don't know Ferrari. I've never sat in one. But I just think the way they run it, the demand and so on. So wherever we go, there are good results. If they've missed, it's only small. It's not like a major miss. You know, there's no demand is slowing down. Particularly, I think we discussed it last week, the lower consumer results. You know, McDonald's saying that people are not going for their $5 meals, and they're not, they're finding less people coming to eat at their restaurants. Procter & Gamble, Starbucks all had the same, you know, said the same thing. So, yes, at the bottom end of the market, things are a little tighter. But it doesn't mean the results were bad. They're just slower than people had thought they'd be, you know. So I think that's the whole point. It's not like there's any stress where companies are making massive losses. The banks are in good shape. There's no threat to their balance sheets at all, and so on. So that remains the underlying situation. And we just have to get through it. You know, that's it.
I'm surprised that the South African market wasn't whacked more. It's only down 1.6% at the moment. That's the all-share index. Mm. The Rand is 18.50, but it's been there without a global risk asset sell-off. South Africa's behaving itself quite nicely, David. I haven't seen
any. I think the rand has helped. Yeah. You know, the rand is at 1857, so you've had a big depreciation, which just helps cushion some of the losses, particularly in the miners, you know, because of Anglo's, BHP and those. It also helps some of the offshore businesses. So we've got about four or five. You know, Richemont's up today. Process is up. Naspers is up. But I think that's on translation as well. So the rand, look, the rand was 1825, 26 on Friday, around there, and 1857. So that's given it some, you know, just a little bit of rumor. But it's Lindsay, it's a small market. You know, we're not a big international market anymore. So we don't really feel the push, you know, the of global markets anymore. Trade is exceptionally low as well. I'm finding we're almost isolated. Look, where are we now? You know, there's quite a bit of trade that's come in now. We're at about 16 billion. But overall, the trade over the last few days has been, you know, the last week or so has been very, very low. So, yes, it does affect sentiment and you do get to sell off, but I don't think we're that much of the international trade anymore. You know, we don't find people looking at us in the same way as they did.
No,
I don't know what's happened to the UK markets.
It wasn't too bad at all. The FTSE was down like 225 points or something earlier. Let me have a quick look. Hold a second. And the S&P, as I said, it's coming off a little bit more now. There's lots more volatility to come as people get phone calls from their brokers and saying, "Oi, Mr. Williams, you owe us X amount," which is not, of course, the case. But the FTSE, it's down 2.5%, which is less than the other major indices, so it's not too bad at all. It's a good, solid country there. So that's it, David. We've sort of summed it up quite nicely. There's some misinformation, disinformation. There were some rumours going around. But I personally think, although it's not going to be a V-shaped recovery, I do think that the worst is over. People will lick their wounds for a while.
Yeah.
And we've got a September the 18th Fed meeting where he really needs to make a bold statement and cut 0.5%, not 25 basis points. But whether he will or not, I don't know. And if things do get worse again, then there has to be an interim cut to steady people's nerves. I don't think that's his style. But don't forget who Jerome Powell is. When you hear Trump saying about how the economy has been mismanaged and if it would never have happened under me, don't forget who appointed him, which you pointed out to me earlier on. Jerome Powell was appointed. He's a Trump appointee. So
remember they fired Yellen and put Powell in her place. Yeah. Mm. So, look... He should have responded on Wednesday. I just think that the signs were there, you know, and it would have made all the difference to the market just saying, okay, we're starting now. You know, we don't have to rush it. We'll take it slowly. We might do September. Let's see what happens. But I think in this case, he did unsettle the nerves of investors and, you know, partly contributing to what we're going through at the moment.
Yes, the carry trade and the relative interest rate plays and the currency trades, etc. Yeah. And as I put it very simply, I looked at what happened last week with the central banks. So there were three central bank decisions. Most important, the United States of America, because it's the biggest, flatliner. Bank of England cut 25 basis points, and Bank of Japan up from 0.1% to 0.25%. And it's like a weather system. You've got a map of the world, and you've got high pressure coming from one area, low pressure from another. When those two pressure systems clash, there's a storm, and that's what we've got. It's exactly the same in the currency and interest rate markets.
Yeah. That's very nicely put. You should write that down.
No, you wrote it down. I can't be bothered. Use it in your next article. David, what about sport? I've started watching a bit of Olympics, which I'm ashamed of myself for doing because I've been so vociferous against it because I'm missing football. But I watched something called the Mixed Triathlon today, which started at 8:45 South African time, where you get two men and two women all swimming, cycling, and then running, and they take it in turns. It takes about an hour and 40 minutes or something. What an incredible race. And there was like less than a second between the three coming in after an hour and 40 minutes. It was the most amazing achievement to do what they do, and their fitness is staggering. Even you would be a little bit jealous of how fit these youngsters are.
I cannot believe them. No, it's been absolutely incredible. The one on Friday night, I watched the 10-kilometer, which was a staggering race, absolutely staggering race. And because they all finished after 10 kilometers within a few meters of each other.
Yes.
I think the poor little South African came fifth, you know, but he was within touching distance of the winner. I watched the 100 meters last night. I mean, there was a nose hair between the first five people, and our poor chap came in number four, you know, just missing a middle. You know, it's just the lean of the head. That's all, the tilt of the head or something. This is like VAR, you know. It's like VAR saying his offsides are not by a centimeter. So, generally the quality of the competition has been superb. I'm staggered by you know, how athletic people are. And also there's been a good atmosphere there. You know, there's, all the competitors are friendly. You don't find anybody sulking. There are no prima donnas, or if you do, I haven't picked them up yet. And, you know, it's just been wonderful to watch. And it's been well organized in the sense that there's no delays. You know, everything's happening. There's a lot happening.
Yeah, there's one thing that is, I mean, apart from the opening ceremony, which was really inappropriate, in my opinion, for certain aspects of it and also the length of it. But swimming in the River Seine, it was a terrible mistake. A terrible mistake. I know they want it to be sustainable and not have to build this the whole new swimming complex and everything. But people are falling sick. The Belgian team had to pull out today because their triathletes from last week swimming in the Seine got ill, so they couldn't compete in the event I was talking about earlier on. The Swiss the same. They had to replace somebody. And you look at these kids, they're diving into a brown river. God knows what's in there.
Oh, my God,
And the current of the Seine is quite strong. And when they go downstream, it's fantastic. And they're breaking records. And they go upstream, and you see they're really, really struggling. And the other thing is they can't practice because of the bacteria levels. They had to cancel all their practice in the river. So none of them have got any chance to practice. So I do think a fundamental mistake by the French trying to be flashy, as the French always are.
Yeah. But, I agree with you then. I wouldn't even put my toe in that river.
God, I wouldn't even put my nose in there. It stinks. Okay, don't forget the 800 metres tonight with Keely Hodgkinson running for Britain, the favourite, and so much more. Oh, the only one there was a bit of a prima donna moment today was the US gymnast, Biles. What's her name? Simone Biles.
Simone, yeah.
Yeah, she fell off the pommel horse. Not the pommel horse, the beam. She fell off the beam, and that denied her the gold medal. And when she got off, she kept on saying, "Who's making that noise?" Someone distracted her with an inappropriate noise during her performance, and she says that's what put her off. And she stormed off in tears because she thought she was hard done by. But otherwise, yeah, you're quite right. Really good spirit, I reckon.
No, that happens, though. I mean, even to Simone Biles, I mean, There was a hammer thrower also wanted silence. I mean, hammer throwing. It was a mad sport. I loved it. It must have its roots in Scotland somewhere.
Yes, like tossing the cable or something. Yeah, the same sort of thing. Okay, David, thank you very much for your time, as always, with your insight and wit. And David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. He'll be back with me and Viv Govender on Thursday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.